The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to Inside the Edition. This is Mike Consul. My guest is Jeff Canny, the CEO of National Real Estate Advisors, an organization that has created an analytical tool to help assess the catastrophic risk that is faced by commercial and all kinds of real estate, for that matter, related to climate change. And Mr. Canny wrote an article for Institutional Real Estate Americas that is in the current edition, and that being the June edition. And he also has that same article will be running in Real Assets Advisor magazine in the July edition. He joins me by telephone from Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
Well, you know, this is a really interesting article that you've written, an interesting tool that you guys have developed, as I was saying, an analytical tool, helps assess the catastrophic risk for real estate. What created the impetus to produce this tool? What inspired your organization to do this?
Well, I guess I would have to say that everyone here is encouraged to try to look forward, not accept the status quo. We've spent a lot of time thinking about what the future is going to bring. It's clear to us that change is accelerating at an enormous rate, a rate that's very difficult for people and businesses to understand and to adapt to. And one of those things that's going on that's going to have, we think, huge changes is climate change. And climate change in particular is, we think, very threatening to our society as a whole. We don't want it to be a threat to our portfolios and our investors because it's largely being ignored. Unfortunately, our government is ignoring it, the current administration, not the past administration, not to be political, but that is a significant change in how our government is looking at the world. And it's contrary to virtually every scientific opinion in the world. So climate change, we believe, is coming. And if we are wrong, that would be great, but we don't want to be caught unaware. So I think our study of climate change and accelerated change in general led us to think that we needed to be more scientific about how we assessed our own portfolio and started to make adjustments as soon as we possibly and reasonably could. There's no imminent danger, in our opinion, of climate change having huge impacts, but it's going to occur gradually, we believe, and at some point there'll be a tipping point about people's opinion about climate change, and those areas in the country that are most susceptible will quickly become very undesirable, and values are going to be tremendously diminished once that tipping point has been reached. That's a long answer for you, but I hope it was responsive.
Well, how does the tool actually work? What factors go into it to help you determine what markets or regions of the country are going to be areas that put a real estate portfolio at risk?
Well, there's nobody, there's no resource currently that you could point to and study that's related exactly to how real estate would be affected by climate change. But what we've done is use some very traditional tools and look at how climate change might either diminish or exacerbate conditions that we know exist today. So we've used data that is used by insurance brokerage firms to study earthquakes, which don't really have anything to do with climate change, but earthquakes, hurricanes, inland flooding, tornadoes, and hail. The last categories there are affected by climate change in some respects because of rising oceans caused by climate change, warming oceans, but also simply because it's predicted by scientists that we're going to have more severe, wetter, windier weather in the future. So using those traditional tools, we were able to identify by looking at every one of our properties exactly what the maximum probable loss would be in terms of how an insurance person would look at that relative to all of those risks. And then we created tables that show what our value is for a particular piece of property, and then what percentage of the annual risk we thought that particular property presented to our portfolio. But I think, you know, studying our portfolio on itself is really the goal, but we also thought we should try to understand how our portfolio stacks up against our competitors and other people in the industry's portfolio. So Malek Madani, who's the head of our research here, I think very cleverly came up with a model portfolio for us to compare our portfolio against, which was derived from data from the NCREIF Property Index, which, you know, in and of itself is not an index that we try to replicate, but it's the largest available database of institutional properties that we're aware of. So he created a model that we could compare our risk profile against the model, and that was very helpful. And one of the things that surprised us when we did that was how much of NCREIF is invested in some pretty high-risk areas. South Florida in particular, which our article talks about, South Florida is the area of our country that is most susceptible to change from climate change, and the second most economically at risk in the entire world, which should be a very sobering thing for anybody who invests or lives in South Florida.
Do you have any properties in South Florida currently, Jeff?
No, not institutionally. I do personally, but it's on the market.
South Florida, Miami and South Florida are at the greatest risk in the United States. Number one in the world is which market?
I think number one in the world is, I think it's Bangladesh or southern India. I'm not sure.
Oh, that floods all the time. So we're well aware of that. And not too many even opportunistic investors would venture to Bangladesh. What other U.S. cities are at risk? What is the next city or two under Miami?
Well, I think it depends how you define the risk, because some of these risks can be mitigated against. For example, New York City, if you just looked at the amount of assets at risk, is probably greater than South Florida. But New York can be mitigated against because New York is built on bedrock, so that not unlike Amsterdam and other places in Northern Europe, it's not an inexpensive proposition, but you could build mitigating devices like seawalls and the like to prevent flooding there. South Florida, unfortunately, has virtually no opportunity for that kind of mitigation because all of Florida is effectively a coral reef. So it's limestone and it's porous. And if you try to build a seawall, the water will just go up under it and come out on the other side. So there's been nobody that I'm aware of, and in our research, we didn't find anyone who thought that there was a really viable way to mitigate against the kind of coastal flooding and the hurricanes that will cause some of the coastal flooding in South Florida. So places like New York have some risk because they're on the water. San Francisco has some risks. Our models that we've studied show that, for example, the airport there and the Oakland airport would both go underwater. But by and large, the cities themselves would remain intact. So although we have some properties in some cities, because most of our investments are in key coastal cities in the United States, that are at some risk, we're very comfortable with that because we think those cities will be able to protect themselves, and the economic vitality of the cities is so important to the country that the necessary investments are going to be made.
How about New Orleans?
Yeah, New Orleans and Houston, they're very much at risk, not just for coastal flooding, but some of the other things that go along with climate change. I was very surprised in our research to see that Houston, where we don't have any investments in New Orleans, but we do have investments in Houston. And Houston, not only is it subject to inland flooding in hurricanes, but also subject to tornadoes and hail. So they get hammered many different ways. On the other hand, Chicago is probably the least risky place in the entire country to invest if your criteria is how do you avoid any kind of catastrophic risk and risks caused by climate change. We found there that any city in the United States, that's the place you want to be if you're looking for safety.
Wow. So let me ask you this then, Jeff. With regard to Houston, where you do have properties, are you busting a move to sell those properties, or do you feel comfortable with those properties for the time being?
Well, we're comfortable with our properties in Houston from a risk perspective because our properties are all essentially brand new. We pay a lot of attention to insurance issues and technological issues and how our things are built. So we're very comfortable that our buildings are going to be fine. The real question for us in Houston is how is the city going to be generally if, for example, climate change were to become apparent, more apparent than it is now, and there were a quick move away from fossil fuels. We don't think that's likely to happen. And we also think that Houston has enough intellectual property and there's enough downstream work relative to the fossil fuel industry that'll be okay. So that's a long-winded way of saying we're comfortable with Houston from a risk perspective, property risk perspective at the moment. One thing I would point out that I think is something that most people in our industry and perhaps in the whole country don't really focus on, which is that almost all property insurances are annual insurance obligations of the insurance company, and they have no obligation to renew your insurance. And one thing we found in studying South Florida, for example, is the rate of increase in property insurance in South Florida is going up at about twice the rate as it is going around the country. You know, one thing we know, insurance companies, they're not in the business of fooling themselves. They take a very hard look at the facts and adjust their policies accordingly and are not willing to give you a 10-year policy for property risk insurance. You'll get 12 months at the most. So what we think will happen in South Florida with these insurance companies, just as has happened now that the government has sort of started to withdraw guarantees on privately owned coastal properties, the insurance rates are going to go up and drive up operating expenses for a property. And ultimately, these properties are going to be uninsurable, and 100% of the risk is going to be on the owner, which, of course, is going to dramatically reduce the appetite for institutions for these kinds of properties.
So financially speaking, how much real estate is at risk in Miami and the surrounding South Florida area? Do you have a dollar figure for that, Jeff, roughly?
I don't. It's billions of dollars. I think 4% of the NCREIF index is invested in South Florida. But it's billions and billions of dollars. And interestingly, there's a tremendous amount of building going on in Miami. Huge amount of building.
You know, I mean, I want our listeners to know that you point out in the article that Miami has the, and correct me if I'm wrong here, the largest percentage of commercial real estate under construction of any major city in the country. Is that correct, Jeff?
As a percentage of its existing base, I believe that's correct.
Which is huge.
Now, a lot of that, I think, is composed of condominiums. So if you're a condominium developer, you're not planning on having an asset in your portfolio, you know, 3 or 4 years after you start construction. So that builder, a condo builder, which is a lot of what goes on there, is only paying attention to will climate change impact my sales before I go on to my next project, as opposed to the condominium buyer, who, of course, should be thinking long term. But, you know, human beings being what they are, they want to believe what they want to believe. And if you want to live in Miami and enjoy the good weather, you don't want to be too troubled by thoughts of what might happen in 15 or 20 years.
Well, and that kind of leads a nice segue to my next question, which is that, you know, that really kind of indicates that developers are not as concerned, real estate developers and investors are not as concerned about the situation in Miami as your organization is. And why is that the case? It sounds like maybe you answered that, that human beings just create their own reality. They're going to, if they like a market, they'll find a reason to be there. Or is there something more involved?
I don't think so. I'm sure there are many other people like our organization who are paying close attention to these issues and are acting accordingly. And we'll find out over time how many people have that point of view and how many people are just completely ignoring it. But I think, you know, in Miami, for example, now with single-family housing, there seems to be a trend where people have finally realized that their home prices are being affected and their ability to resale is being affected. And it's not apparent, I guess, widely apparent, but it's certainly apparent to us because we follow this stuff. And you know, Miami, there's flooding during the daytime, particularly Miami Beach. There is, whenever there's a king tide or even not such a king tide, it can be a perfectly sunny, beautiful day, and streets can be flooded with 2 feet of water. I was just reading several articles about people who said their lawns just get up and float away. And, you know, you can put up with that, right, for a while, even if you don't think it's going to get worse, but it's not going to help you sell the property. And I've read several articles about people who've realized that it's becoming more and more difficult for them to sell their homes. That'll happen to commercial real estate eventually.
Well, and as you pointed out, the insurance issue, rates going up, they can, you know, it's after 1 year term, they could just go ahead and cancel you. So property insurance is not going to mitigate this risk, it sounds like, is what you're saying, that the fact that you have property insurance doesn't mean that you're not going to get hammered, or for that matter, just the inherent risk of a market. It can diminish the value of the portfolio, which is obviously what you're trying to avoid.
We are trying to avoid it. We also think there'll be depressed economic activity generally in areas that are going to be subject to climate change. If you're living in an area that's regularly flooding, regularly has hurricanes, regularly has high winds, that's not going to be a terrific encouragement for businesses to locate there. Businesses like stability, political stability, economic and environmental stability. So we want to be in areas that have the best risk profiles that we can find.
So how does National Real Estate Advisors, plan to invest in the future, given the outcome of these findings? Where are you going to be putting some extra dollars into Chicago and obviously staying away from Miami? But and over the longer term, are you thinking in terms of making an exit from Houston, Texas?
Well, there's always a basket of risks. So take Chicago. That's an interesting subject. We actually are very negative about Chicago. We're very negative about Illinois. And that negativity, which is caused by their fiscal problems, can't be overcome by having a great risk pile for environmental issues. So we're Chicago has other problems, and whenever we're looking at any investment anywhere, you know, there are multiple issues you have to look at. Environmental resiliency is just one. So are we going to sell our properties in Houston anytime soon? No. We're very comfortable with the risk of our assets and the city in general in Houston. If we were in New Orleans, I don't know what I would say about that. So where we're investing is where we always invest, which is in the core of urban markets that have terrific amounts of intellectual capital for the new economy and robust social and political structures. Now, what that means for us is, in terms of environmental resilience, is that we have a lot of properties on the West Coast, and if you have properties on the West Coast, you have earthquake risk. And the way we try to mitigate against earthquake risk for ourselves is to have the newest possible buildings that we can, that have the highest state-of-the-art technology for structural engineering. But we don't, if we want to be in the kinds of cities we want to be in, we cannot avoid that environmental risk. We can mitigate against it, but we can't avoid it.
Well, now you piqued my interest about Chicago. You know, I'm thinking in terms of the negatives there being public debt, crime, a shrinking population. Is that, does that kind of cover it, or are there some other aspects to Chicago that's kind of keeping you at arm's length?
Well, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. But subsumed in those thoughts is the political paralysis that exists, and we try very hard to stay away from any local area where we don't feel that the community is in sync and can make progress and can solve problems. In Chicago and Illinois in general, I know the state of Illinois is about to have their bond rating turned to junk. They haven't had a state budget in almost 2 years. And what's happening, I believe, I know what's happening to the properties that we've had in Chicago, although we've sold most of our Chicago properties, is that, you know, if you have to make pension payments to pay pensions that were underfunded for decades and decades, that money has to come from somewhere. It has to come from increased taxes, or it has to come from decreased services. And what they've been doing is both, but they have no solution for a problem. There's no viable long-term plan to solve their fiscal problems, made, you know, primarily a problem because of their pension obligations. And until there's a plan on the table that people like our organization can believe in to invest theirs, to put blinders on and say, well, they're going to have to solve this problem. Well, that's not true. That's what investors within Puerto Rican bonds did. You know, for years and years and years, the federal government will never let Puerto Rico go broke. And look at those yields, 10% yields, tax-free, state, local, and federal. Best deal you could think of. Well, those bondholders are going to have nothing. So in terms of Chicago and Illinois, I'm from the Midwest, so I love those places. My vision of them is you get a public worker who's worked all his life with the promise of a pension, and he should get one, and he retires, and where does he go? He goes to Arizona, Phoenix, the fastest-growing jurisdiction in the country, and he collects his pension payments while the people back in Illinois get their services cut in order for those pension payments to be made. It's not a great system for generating local economic activity in Illinois. I don't know how they're going to solve their problem, but until they do, we're very wary about investing in Illinois. So there's a long answer for you.
Well, there you have it. My guest has been Jeff Canny. He's CEO of National Real Estate Advisors. We've been talking about this new catastrophic risk tool that takes into account climate change and its impact on real estate portfolios in certain at-risk markets. Jeff, it's great to have you on the program again. Thanks a lot. And to our listeners, check out Jeff Canny's article in Institutional Real Estate Americas. It's in the June edition. It will also be running in the July edition of Real Assets Advisor magazine. Jeff, thanks for your time.
It's been my pleasure, Mike. Thank you very much.